Welcome to another episode of Mature Audiences Mayhem. My name is Glenn King, and it's my honor to bring you this podcast where we talk about the things that other podcasts either cannot or will not talk about. That is, things that are for mature audiences only. Today, a very, 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 very special guest on the podcast. As you know, one of the things we like to cover on the podcast is pro wrestling, and we've had some amazing pro wrestlers on the podcast. Today, we've got one of the best pro wrestlers in the history of the business. His name is Rob Van Dam. I'm sure you know of him. A little background on this. I helped Impact produce some segments for their show while they were in Las Vegas a few weeks ago. And we did some Rob Van Dam promos. And so, you know, the greatest promos of all time, I say this as a wrestling fan, not a smark, you know, not a wrestling expert, just a guy that kind of watches every once in a while. But the greatest promos have always been the ones that are shoot promos, that come from the heart. People always talk about the pipe bomb promo. 2 minutes into Rob's promo, 2 seconds into Rob's promo, I realized we were witnessing something special. He was speaking from the heart about RVD and what his impact on this business has been. And that promo went viral, and now people are still talking about it 3 weeks later or whatever. So I'm so thrilled that Rob was willing to come on the podcast and talk about all these things that he talked about in the promo. And with that, I give you the great Rob Van Dam.
Yes. Thanks, dude. Yeah, Katie has showed me that the hot tub promos get way more views than anything else that Impact is trying to push, you know, with any of their matches,
right?
Championship matches, whatever. And so that's cool. Most people are digging it, and some of the stuff, you know, sometimes people say, ugh, nauseating. That's great. You know, I just turned heel.
Yes.
I'm having fun with it.
Yeah. And this is the thing, though, is that instead of being the typical heel that, you know, uses the tried and true methods, you're really just saying stuff that annoys people that's true.
Yeah. If somebody really can't see RVD being a heel, then they really don't know the real me. I've always said, and I get some pushback when I say this, but I know, like I always have been, RVD has been a heel. I mean, come on, I call myself the whole effing show. You're gonna tell me that I'm a narcissist? Of course I am. I call myself the whole fucking show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was just to taunt the crowd in 96 with ECW. They loved Sabu. He was like a god. And so they would boo me wrestling him. They'd say, Sabu, Sabu. And then I would do something cool, 360 leg drop, boom. I'd say, what's that? Don't you mean this guy? And I'd point my thumbs at myself. I really didn't know I was doing anything that was going to be so unique and you know, a taunt that would forever be the RVD thumbs. But that was just me working with the crowd. And again, you know, from a heel perspective. So it's fun. It's not a new RVD to me. It's just showing like a different side, you know.
That noise that you guys hear in the background, the grunting and growling, is Petrie. Petrie the dog comes with RVD here.
Yes, and there's some food on the table, so she'll probably be crying and grunting through the whole time. But
how about it?
She needs her airtime too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So getting back to that promo, though, you know, when I first started watching wrestling, and you know, I'm a few couple of years older than you, but you came on the scene, and I was like, man, this dude is doing moves that no one's ever done before. That, you know, we're watching him do these gymnastics type things and martial arts moves and whatever. And now, of course, you watch wrestling, and on every show,
everybody,
they're all doing the things that you were doing 20 years ago.
Not only that, but they're even doing my thumb. Like, how's anybody going to think you're not doing my pose?
Right.
There's at least two guys on NXT that I saw doing my pose. And I saw somebody on whatever show we were watching the other day. I don't know. I don't watch all the different wrestling. And if it wasn't for Katie being at a point where she's learning and picking up a lot, then I wouldn't probably watch it all. I do that, you know, try to help her. But it's still rare. I'm still learning guys' names in my company. And I've been in Impact since April.
Yeah.
The moves. And even the thumbs, they're pointing at, and some of them are trying to do it a little different. I'll just do one hand. That'll be my take on it, you know, or one guy, I'll just point at myself and then I'll raise my hand up afterwards or whatever. But honestly, I mean, I guess it's flattering in a way, you know?
Okay, but here's my problem with this. Not on your end of this thing, but all right, so every line of work has the same issue if the industry's been around for many years. I'm in the adult film industry. Pretty much nothing that I'm doing has ever been... People come to me in the past and say, you stole my idea. Mm. And I say, really? Because I've been doing this since 2002. Let's go back. Oh, yeah, here you go, 2006.
We did the blowjob in the car.
Right. We did the pizza guy.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't invent anything, and nobody since me has invented anything. We're all just kind of going off the same basic things. But when I do... when I'm influenced by somebody, I give them credit. I've always been said, yes, you know what? I watched Rodney Moore. I watched the Stagliano. I watched all these guys, and I got ideas from them. These guys aren't crediting you is the issue here. They're influenced by you, but they're not coming out in like their interviews and saying, all right, well, yeah, I watched RVD, and that's why I got the idea to point my thumb at myself.
Right. And you know, I think most of the fans know, but on top of that, you know, if somebody was going to use my name and say, not obviously I didn't have hands-on training these guys, because I have issues with so much that I see nowadays. And that's, you know, I got the old school fundamentals, and wrestling is so different now that I'm one of the old school guys that looks at wrestling and I'm like, oh my God, you know, what are they doing to the business? And because of that, you know, there's not going to be anybody out there that says, yeah, RVD trained me. Because if there were, then they would be doing it the right way according to my values.
Right.
And I can explain that real easy because,
yeah.
Okay, so I started, like, I went to wrestling school in December of 89. Back then, you know, people still looked at it like a fight. It was a little, you know, questionable. But the number one rule in the business that the original Sheik, he was my mentor, trained me. And he told me the number one rule is to protect the business. And that's the way that I got brought in. That's why if I get a busted nose or there's blood in a match or whatever, that's great. That's good for the business. That's what we used to always say. We used to always say, oh, that's good for the business when someone got hurt. Now, it's not about protecting the business at all. It's the opposite. And so even though I can't stop it from evolving, and I'm not trying to, I personally have a distaste, a dislike for it, because now it's like, fuck protecting the business. Let's show this crowd that thinks that they understand how everything is going on. Let's show them what we could do if we didn't have to protect the business, you know? So here, let me put you in a full Nelson, and then you wrap your legs around me and then act like you're stuck, you know? Or here, grab my hand. Let me walk from one corner post to the other. Don't try and pull me down or anything, you know? Here, catch my foot. Right, I'm gonna do a backflip. One, two, you ready? I mean, it's, you know, it's some of the stuff. Some of that stuff I did, you know, years ago, but I had to make it fit in within the confines of protecting the business, which means that I did it differently than they're doing it, and I quit doing all the stuff that didn't work anyway, you know.
Yeah. So there's this a lot of finishing moves these days.
Oh my God, yeah, they kick out of every single finish. When I used to wrestle in All Japan from 93 to 97, that was a big part of my career, and we would go on a tour. It might be 10 days, it might be 3 weeks, whatever. But the very last show would be the big one. It was always at the Tokyo Budokan, which held like 17,000 people. And on that show, everyone turned it up. I was always accused of having like one speed. Like, I don't take it easy on smaller shows because I still do my shit. I still want to stand out. I want the people to respect me, whatever. But the guys that were on top, you know, and this was when I was just a kid, you know, 23 years old, you know, and the guys like Misawa and Kawada and Kobashi, all these guys, they would take it easy on the road. And I understood that. And, you know, me and Sabu might say, oh, look, he's lazy tonight. You know,
yeah.
We looked at it from that competitive state of mind, but I understand it. But at the Budokan, when we were at the big show, man, they would crank it up like they were 20-year-olds. And they were like old Tawe, you know, he's smoking a cigarette. Ooh, take it easy every day. Like, he looks like he barely moved. And then, boom, at the Budokan, he's taking a choke slam from the apron to the floor. Bam. Everything that they did, I was like, whoa, I didn't even know they could do that every time at the Budokan. Now, every single show, every match, it seems like, tries to emulate that – that specialness that isn't so special anymore. So to entertain the smarks, some of the matches are let's kick out of each other's finishes 14 times.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of that. I mean, if it's really special and it means a lot and it's a big buildup and like holy shit, you guys had a man, that was a fucking outstanding match, best match I've ever seen. To get that kind of match, then sometimes you do have to do this, the kickouts, the false finishes, you know, because it's always about...
tell a story.
Yeah, you're trying to get the fans to not expect what you're giving them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just something else that people don't do anymore. But so it's not as special anymore when it's every single match. And so I'm not as impressed as a lot of the fans are with the newer generation. You know, I mean, I'm not taking anything from them. I'm just saying I'm not as excited about it.
Have you seen Orange Cassidy yet?
I don't think so. I've heard of his name.
His gimmick is he's like a slacker and he keeps his hands in his
pocket.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I wasn't sure the first time I saw it if the traditional wrestling guys like you were just going to be so pissed at this guy making a mockery of the business. But on the other hand, it kind of grows on you after a while when you watch him. But
I think
it is a mockery of the business, what he does.
Yeah, and the business really is silly. I mean, wrestling is silly. I mean, if you go back to when I grew up watching it, Uncle Elmer's in there carrying a pig, you know, and square dancing with Hillbilly Jim and, you know, Junkyard Dog.
They were cartoons.
Yeah,
back
they
in,
were totally
cartoons.
And they were aimed for kids, right?
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of changes, and you can always compare things, you know, like I talk about how you can tell people are working together and they're not worried about protecting it. Someone could say, yeah, but you used to throw a chair and someone catch it and you jump up and kick it. True. But whatever, if you don't catch the chair, I'm going to kick you in the face anyway. You might as well hold the chair as a shield. I would. You know, I mean, it makes more sense than some of the, you know, I hate the Canadian Destroyer. Do you know that move?
No.
It's just one of the moves where I can't tell who's giving the move to who.
Oh, yes. I hate moves like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and, of course, the crowd goes nuts and they pop, so that's what they do it for. They just do it all for
the
pops.
If the announcer wasn't there to tell you that, oh, I can't believe he pulled that,
right.
You wouldn't know which of the two guys just did a move.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true.
Let me ask you this about wrestling. I've had this discussion with every wrestling person that's been on the show. The thing that I think wrestling has lost from the days that the heyday, let's call it, is the lack of real heels that we fans just hate and want to see them get beaten up. All the heels want to be cool and cheered, sort of, and so on. And so, I mean, it's just storytelling. No matter what form of entertainment you're in, you want people to be like, oh, yeah. I freaking hate this guy. I want to see somebody kick his ass.
Right. No, that is totally missing. And the way the business is now, I don't know if that'll come back. You know, like usually if somebody really hates somebody, usually it's because they think they're a piece of shit and can't work, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. Someone like Brock, he has legitimate heat. Like people get seriously pissed at Brock because he gets paid so much to work so little, and it irks people. That's the kind of hate you're talking about, where people are like, God, I wish someone just kick his ass. And that used to be the goal. Now me, like, you know, I as a heel, I got to admit, you know, like when people get behind me on Instagram or whatever, and they just say, dude, no matter what, you're the GOAT. You've always been the best, and I'll follow you no matter what. I got to admit, like, I don't turn those people away. Someone like Bubba Dudley, He's more of the legitimate heel. I aspire to be as good of a heel as Bubba Dudley.
Yeah.
One time on Twitter, he retweeted something where someone gave him some compliments. Bubba, man, you're the best. You're the best. You're one of my favorites, dude. I, you know, no matter what anyone says, I'll always be behind you. He wrote blocked. And that's good shit. But it is. I mean, everything has to change. You know what I mean?
I got pulled up Sheik, your Twitter.
The Sheik who trained me. The original Sheik, not the Iron Sheik. He was a top box office attraction in the 50s and 60s. He had more heat than anybody.
Yeah.
And that was in the day of kayfabe. Do you know what that means?
Well, you're protecting it.
All right, I'm going to interrupt my own podcast here because I want to explain kayfabe real quick. It seems like every time we do a wrestling podcast, we toss the term around kayfabe and never really explain it. But what it basically means is staying in character. When back in the day, wrestlers used to always stay in character. In fact, Rob talks about here in the podcast about how if he was driving to the event with other wrestlers, he would have to get dropped off a few blocks away so that he could enter on his own and not be seen with the bad guys if he was a good guy. So that's what kayfabe is. The wrestlers back in the day would protect the business, and they would actually say to each other in the dressing room when somebody was coming that wasn't in the business, kayfabe, meaning stay in character.
And yeah, there is no more kayfabe whatsoever. And so, you know, I used to, anyway, the Sheik, he started riots and he was kicked out of cities and stuff, you know, and he never spoke English in front of people. So nobody thought that he really could. And that was commitment and that was protecting the business. And I'm not saying everybody now should go back to that because they would seem like idiots, maybe, but that's just one of the changes. And it's not only outside of the ring, but it's during the match. And that bothers me. I think during the match, that it should be protecting the business, honestly.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just doing a spot and then turning to the crowd for the cheers for the big move that you just made. And the reality is, right now, like, who in the business is a pure heel? Bubba Dudley, which, by the way, I saw him. I went to ROH at the last minute a few weeks ago here in Vegas, and he walked in and destroyed some people. And he didn't make any eye contact with anybody in the audience. He didn't smile at anybody. He came in there and destroyed people and then got out of there.
Yeah. And
like,
he's
good.
And he really is, when he wants to be a dick to the fans, he's been a dick, you know. Like, I tell people, you know, I used to say, yeah, D-Von's a cool one. Bubba's the asshole, you know. And he's not always, but he doesn't mind being that guy. And it's... it's conducive to his character, you know what I mean? I was going to say, way back in 91, when I was wrestling in USWA, Tennessee, I was a babyface, and I would ride in the car from town to town with Sabu, Judge Dredd, for a little bit Chris Candido was with us, also my friend Dingo. But anyway, I was the only babyface, and they would drop me off.
Wait, Dingo?
Dingo, no, this guy, Dingo Nguyen, he just passed away from cancer. He was my best friend since sixth grade. We did everything together. And anyway, they would drop me off several blocks from the arena, and I'd have to walk just so that nobody would see us pulling in. You know, if not, I would have to lay down on the floorboard, you know, they'd cover me with blankets and stuff when they're just driving, to the arena to park, because we were taught to protect the business. Just like the way of Omerta for the mafia, you know, the old school, they used to protect their shit. Nowadays, you know, everyone just flips as soon as they, you know, have a chance to get themselves out of trouble. It's the same thing. It's like there's a lot of similarities.
All right. Speaking of being a dick. I've got your Twitter in front of me here. And I say that with respect, totally. Because I love what you're doing on Twitter here. But people are coming at you, and you're not giving them any leeway at all.
No, you're going
back at them here. Sometimes when you meet me in public and you ask if I remember you, I'll say, dude, but I have no idea who you are. Pound, heel, RVD. Often, I don't understand the meaning of your message, or I will dislike what you're saying, but I'll still click on the heart button and say, on the like button and say, whatever, dude.
Yes.
This is the new RVD that we're talking about.
And then I said, another one I said was, when I look at you for approval before I go up to the top for the 5-star frog splash, I was going to do it anyway. just taking everything away from them a little bit, but... yeah, that's fun. It's fun being a dick, and there's respect comes with it. You know what I mean? People actually that know it's entertainment are entertained by that, and thereby, you know, don't necessarily reject everything you're doing. But then there are some. You know, then I read someone say, "Dude, you know, RVD was my favorite wrestler since I was a little kid. Now I can't stand him." And that's something that I never wanted to have when we were talking about me turning heel. That was something I was like, you know, I kind of stand for being cool and positive and everything. And then ultimately it was like, well, fuck it, let's do it. And I'm still cool. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the good and the bad, right? Is that for you to be a heel, you're always going to be a cool heel. You're a cool dude, for starters. And secondly... You got now Katie Forbes either managing you or whatever you want to call her, your valet, your wife, all this stuff, right? How's anybody not going to like you?
Jealousy.
In a hot tub with, there you go.
Jealousy.
That's it.
Because when, this is the way that I see it though, like no matter what, it's almost offensive for anybody to think that I would care about their insult, you know what I mean? And sometimes people just throw an insult because they're hoping to get a response, you know, and sometimes I respond, they're like...
That's all of them, man. Yeah, that's everybody on Twitter. But they they troll me, they troll everybody.
Here's why I feel bulletproof, though. Mm-hmm. Look at the top of my head. I have a fucking man bun on. If somebody wants to say, oh my God, that man bun looks ridiculous. Hey, guess what? Katie Forbes thinks it's hot. Boom. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Exactly. And, you know, I'm like that everywhere in life. Like, that's how I became the whole effing show. I was like, dude, I'm the best guy on the whole show. And then I backed it up. And that's how I got my following. And, like, now it's like, dude, I've got such a great life. There's so much good that's going on. And it's everything that I manifested. So anybody that wants to try to... bring me down, good luck.
Well, and the things they're trying to bring you down on, and believe me, I understand this because I work in the gold industry. I live the lifestyle. People come at me constantly with, man, you're a freaking pig that you live this lifestyle of, you know, having sex with 20-year-olds or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I am. Exactly. But wow. People have said to me, well, you pay for it because, you know, you produce these videos and then you just, and I'm like, yes, I do. And I get to choose whoever I want to have sex with, whenever I want to have sex, on my own terms, whatever. So I'm not ashamed at all.
You know, we all have our own values. And if everybody understood that, everyone would get along so much better. You have to understand it and you have to respect it. You know what I mean? Like, people want you to like what they like. And,
yes.
And that's just so annoying when people just like push their values. Because, you know, being a TV star, that makes me one-dimensional to 99% of the people who know RVD. That means they get to fill in all the other blanks, you know what I mean? They could think that I have a family with 8 kids at home, or they could think that I drive a truck in the mud, you know, for fun, or they could think I'm a hunter, whatever. None of that is true, and that's okay. They don't have to know the real me, but when I expose a little bit of the real me, it might not be consistent with some of their values, so that's a risk
we
always take.
I just think it's jealousy, and you know, the same thing, like, people are starting to realize these days that these webcam girls, which now it's everywhere in the country, you know, they're living in Cleveland, Ohio, and all of a sudden, this girl who works 4 hours a day is driving a new Corvette, and then they're like, then they start coming out with, well, that girl's a slut or a whore or whatever. And it's like, they're kind of just jealous that she's living the life. And I think that's the case with your haters right now. They see you with 2 girls in some of your posts now saying, yeah, these are my wives. Or they see you in a hot tub with multiple girls with the thumbs pointing at you. And they're like, yeah, you're a ratchet, you know, sleaze bag or whatever.
Yeah, in the meantime, they're posting pictures on Instagram of what they're having for dinner. What the fuck?
Yeah, how's your life going, buddy? Yeah. That's what I like to say to these guys here.
Absolutely.
All right, so, I want to ask you about Katie Forbes, actually, first. Like, I got Katie's side of the story here a few weeks ago on the podcast.
We are spiritually married. We haven't physically... gone through the tradition of being married, but
which is irrelevant. Come on, I mean,
dude, we're the connection and bond that we have.
Yeah,
it's so crazy strong. I didn't know that was possible. Yeah. And a lot of outsiders, you know, like for everything I do in my life, the way that their brain works, it would blow their mind to know that their view of the world is so far off from the world that I live in. You know, Katie's so awesome. As soon as I met her, I didn't know that she might have told you this, but she already had her eyes on me before I met her. And so I met her at WrestleCon in Texas, like 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago.
Right.
And when I thought she was hot and everything, you know, but I didn't realize that she'd been really wanting to meet me for a while. And then, you know, we went out and she was very persistent, you know, and like, being aggressive towards, hey, I'm your girlfriend, you know, like, you're going to Vegas next week? Cool, I'd love to go. You know? And I'm glad that she did, because, like, we've gotten along, like, so great since the beginning. I was in a long-term marriage. After like 15 years or so, we got separated. And then it was like 20 years before the divorce was actually final. And so I went through like a period where I just wanted to be single. But I was also like severely depressed. The divorce to me was a failure. Of course, now I look at it as like God saved me. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Of
like, yeah, of course. Now, but at the moment it was like, no, it's a failure. Go, you know, we'll stick it out and I'll be complacent for life. But that happened, and my dog died, and my dad died, and so I was like really severely depressed for a while. While I met Katie, you know, but during this time, as a single guy, you know, I had my values, my priorities. Let's put it that way. Definitely changed. You know what I mean? I was thinking, well, I need to get out there and, you know, fuck everything, because I've been faithful to my wife all along. And I was like,
which makes you the only wrestler in the entire history of the business.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And it also makes me the only one with integrity from that perspective.
That is true.
Yeah. I'm honest, you know, like I don't lie. I might read a script if I'm acting, but I really don't lie. And I can't imagine lying to the person you're spending your life with. But so many of the wrestlers that I know, their family at home has no idea who they really are. You know, and their family's out on the road. For me, it's never been like that. I always couldn't wait to get off the road and get back home, even when things were shitty. Even when I'm by myself at home, I don't prefer being on the road with all the guys. You know what I mean? Like, I get enough of them and their values. It's a locker room mentality, like a fraternity kind of, like, everyone, you know, like, dude, what are you wearing those shoes for? Who the fuck cares? Are you really going to talk about that like you're in third grade? But that's a shit
boys, right?
Yeah. So Katie's so awesome.
Wait,
though.
Yeah. So I wanted to make 2 points about Katie real quick. So number one, for the listeners, if you haven't done this yet, so go back and you watch those promos. They're on YouTube for Impact of Katie and Rob in the hot tub with Rob sort of turning heel. But what you may not have noticed, because you were so engrossed in what Rob was saying, was the look between Katie and Rob. It's so intense. It's so passionate. You see the real connection between the two of them.
Cool.
Now, in regards to the other podcast when Katie was on, do you know what she said was the moment that she knew it was real with you and her?
No. What did she say?
She said she realized that she was your screensaver on her phone.
Oh, yes. That was the deal. Yeah. That is what happened on our first date. It was a lunch date, and I'm sure I was just drinking one beer after another and spilling my guts out. And she says that she didn't even think I was interested in her.
Yeah.
And then I said, hey, look, I got to go do this podcast. You're welcome to come with me, and I can drop you off afterwards. Or if you go with me and you're having fun, then we can go do dinner or something afterwards. Totally up to you. And she says that she was about to say, take me back. And then my phone lit up, and I had her on the screensaver. So that was the move. Yeah. Make sure you got the right hoe on your phone, everybody.
let's give that as a lesson. And speaking of lessons, I want to ask Rob about his sort of personal spirituality. Not a religious question, but just the fact that you're so laid back. But first, I got to tell you about our sponsors of the show.
All right, let's talk about Sext Panther. So if you're a regular listener to my show, in addition to all of the great entertainers I've brought you, like pro wrestlers and comedians, etc., I've brought on a lot of adult film stars and webcam artists and other adult performers. And if you have enjoyed listening to them and want to get to know any of them a little better, the way you do it is Sext Panther, SextPanther.com. You go there, you get the phone number of your favorite girl, and you just start sending her text. It's that simple. She can text you back. She can send you pictures. She can send you videos. Or she can even talk on the phone with you. What a great way for you to get to know your favorite adult performer up close, personal, and in an intimate way. Many of the performers who have been on the show are on Sext Panther. Christina Rose, Ginger Lynn, Christy Canyon, Kimberly Chi, Courtney Taylor. Almost everybody that's been on the show is on Sext Panther, including CJ Miles, who was on the show last week. So Do yourself a favor. Go to sexpanther.com, check it out, and start talking to your favorite adult performer today. And also, if you are an adult performer who listens to the show, so many of you do, and you haven't gotten on Sex Panther yet, are you insane? What are you waiting for? This is the best way for you to build real relationships with your fans instead of just thinking of them as people that pay for your products and services. So whether you're a fan or whether you're a performer, go to sexpanther.com today. All right, let's talk about Blue Chew, bluechew.com. I use bluechew.com so I can personally endorse Blue Chew. Blue Chew is the world's first chewable erectile dysfunction pill that contains the same active ingredients as Cialis and Viagra. Being chewable means that it gets in your system a lot faster. It means it hits you a lot faster, which can be crucial. When you are about to have sex and you know you might need an erectile dysfunction pill, you want it to get in your system as fast as possible. It's actually quite delicious. They kind of taste like Pez. I think they're cherry flavored. It's hard to say exactly, but I absolutely love the pills. It's very easy to get Blue Chew pills. You do not have to go to your doctor. You do not have to go stand in line at a pharmacy. You don't have to go through any of the awkwardness that you usually do when getting erectile dysfunction pills. In this case, all you got to do is go to bluechew.com, bluechew.com, and you'll just type in a little box on the screen, hey, I've got erectile dysfunction problems. A doctor will review it with you and then write a legal prescription, and then the products will be shipped right to your home in a very discreet package. Let me make this really simple and easy for you. Use my promo code ADULT, A-D-U-L-T, and you can try out Blue Chew for free. Yep, that's what I said, free. You can try out your first shipment of Blue Chew for free. You just pay $5 for shipping and handling. Very easy to do. It's a wonderful pill. Again, I personally endorse it. So go to bluechew.com today, right now, and get started with your first shipment of Blue Chew erectile dysfunction pills. All right, one more sponsor to tell you about today, and that is the great Savage Sin Clothing. Savage Sin Clothing can be found at SavageSinClothing.com, where it says, at Savage Sin, we take our MMA and XXX lifestyle seriously. Live fast, fight hard, that's our motto. Our clothing serves as a reminder of the badass that's inside all of us. Savage Sin Clothing is where you can find contemporary clothes that can be worn just about anywhere, whether it's to the gym, to the ball, etc., with cool things on the shirts. I personally have trouble picking out clothing, and that is why I love Savage Sin. Just on their website right now, browsing through the catalog, looking in the men's section today. Some cool stuff here. I see, a shirt that says Live Fast, Fight Hard. Here's one that says Ride or Die. Live Fast, Die Old. That's what I need. Live Fast, Die Old. All kinds of things here. They've got shirts, they've got bikinis, they've got tank tops, they've got accessories. It's all here for you, and you can use my promo code, KINGSIN, KINGSIN, get a 40% discount plus free shipping on your order. So that's pretty much an offer that you cannot refuse. Go give it a try. Go to SavageSinClothing.com today and get yourself some really awesome clothing. All right, so we're back, and I want to ask Rob about just being on the plane of life that he lives, because this is something I've been getting into a lot lately. I actually met a guy through Don Callis and the guys at Anthem who is like a spiritual guy, and he's been teaching me about how to ignore the little voices in my head, you know, like the ones that are like, hey, why hasn't so-and-so called you back yet? Or, you know, what's going to happen with when I said this yesterday? Like, what does she think of this? Whatever. Yeah. You learn to ignore all that, and that's how you become laid back, is that you start focusing on the important things in life. Yeah. Like, do you have a philosophy that you can outline for the listeners that maybe they can benefit from?
Probably so. Usually when I talk, people tell me that they really got a lot out of it. So I used to think I was protected by like a guardian angel, because things always worked out for me when I was a kid. And then I was turned on to this book, The Celestine Prophecy, which made me, you know that book?
Yes.
Made me learn a lot about energy and also realize there was a lot of people like me, not just me. And in fact, it made me think everybody is supposed to be connected or plugged in, as I like to say, to that universal energy, if you want to call it God, whatever. For me, I like to just call it the universe, and the universe loves me and it loves Katie, and things work out, and I build my relationship with the universe by by one, like you said, not allowing myself to dwell on negative energy. Anytime I'm unplugged, I can feel it, and it's because I feel bad, whether I'm worried or mad or angry or whatever. But you feel positive, you know, and you feel love, and you plug into that. And plus, you know, anything that makes you happy, you know what I mean? If porn is your go-to and that's your energy shifter when you're really mad, you need to put porn on, it makes you happy. I mean, that, you know, that can be a safe thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people look at that right away as if like, no, that's something bad and negative and people are hooked on it, whatever. That's a whole different conversation.
Well, you can get addicted to anything. I don't buy that.
Petrie's addicted to these chips.
Yes, he is.
right. But so what I'm saying, whatever it is, if it's bird watching or whatever, there's things that you should pay attention to. And this is what I did. I paid attention to things that brought my energy up and things that brought my energy down. And if it were things that brought my energy down, I would stay away from it. It could just be like somebody talking really loud. And I could just be like, you know, I'm so aware. I'm telling myself like, wow, that person's really obnoxious and it's lowering my energy. And I'll just go somewhere else. And, you know, people interrupt me sometimes. I'll just stop talking because I don't want to fight with them and have that challenge, that contest of energy, you know, and
right.
Because that's what it is. You're trying to steal each other's energy when you talk all over each other. And no, what I have to say is more important than what you have to say right now. And you know, that's one of my pet peeves. But the Celestin Prophecy explained all of this in the 9 Insights to Life that I had. It's a fiction book, but based on these real elements, and it follows up with nonfiction study guides. The Secret, that was a great,
yeah, I like
great
the
one.
Secret.
Yeah. The four. What is it? The
Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements.
That's a good one.
I love that one too. Yeah. So
I need to go back and reread all of these. Actually,
they're so helpful. And if you're into it, then it really means a lot more to you than if it's someone that just doesn't give a fuck. You know.
Yeah.
And like most people don't give a fuck. They don't try to improve themselves. They're miserable.
Right.
They hate their job. They hate their life. They hate their family. Whatever.
Yeah, they're just enjoying their misery. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
these aren't my people.
Yeah. One of the things I learned recently is, something goes wrong for me, and then I spend the next 3 days replaying it over and over in my mind, trying to figure out what went wrong, what I could have done better, what's going to happen next, blah, 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 blah. And then I take drugs to, you know, to stop thinking about it, like, you know, like weed or Xanax or whatever. And
sure.
So the thing that I realized that somebody said to me was, right, you're taking the drugs to turn off the voices in your head. For a few hours, you're not thinking about these things, and so you're joyous. He goes, but you can learn to do that without the drugs. You can enjoy the drugs still, you know, if you want to. You know, marijuana, I love it as well. But by learning the great mental techniques to be like, oh, okay, I'm dismissing that thought because I don't need to continue with it.
And to simplify that, the difference between you and I and Petrie, the Boston Terrier that I got right here, she can't, as far as I know, she can't choose what she's thinking about.
Right.
We can. You can totally just choose what you want to think about. And if you're thinking about good thoughts, then you feel good. And if you think about bad thoughts, then you're going to feel bad. So it really is, in the simplest terms, that basic, you know, and then you can learn to apply it because... a lot of times we torture ourselves by focusing on the bad, and that's just because we're trying to get sympathy from ourselves. It's the story we're telling ourselves. When I was really down, DDP helped me with that advice. He said, it's the story that you're telling yourself. And I was like, he's so right, because, you know, what's the story I'm telling myself? Oh, my God, poor me, I'm so fucked. You know, my dad died, my dog died, I'm all alone here, and it's a boom, boom, boom. And that is what I'm telling myself. And he said, change the story that you're telling yourself, and you'll change your life. And I thought that was one of the many, many things that helped me out, and you know, it's something that I'll always remember.
There you go. You may not be able to change your circumstances, but you can always change your attitude towards the circumstances. You can always change the telling of the story to yourself.
I take it to an extreme where I think most people would have a really hard time being around me, you know, because like plans stress me out. So like I don't make plans, and so like and I tell everyone I just go with the flow.
Yeah.
But you would. There's no. I wouldn't even believe me if I didn't know this was true. But like, cause even though I've been wrestling for 30 years and I've been flying so much, like every week for a big part of that, I still almost miss like just about every flight when I'm getting to the airport. And I'm always like, you know, like pushing it like on the way. And it's, I don't plan ahead. And I just think, oh yeah, okay, I'll get ready in a few minutes, and then I never plan for anything extra, you know, for sitting on the toilet or for traffic to be slow or anything.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And I know by that time you got to run back in the house and get that item that you forgot.
Yeah, and I know it drove my ex nuts, you know, and she was already nuts. Let me make that clear. but as far as that goes, I mean, I could see where that would be really difficult, but it's just what works for me. I mean, it really does. And Katie's awesome in the way, you know, that we both just feed off of each other in a good way. We both just want to make each other happy. I want to give her the best life she could possibly have, you know. So it's a very non-selfish thing that I want, as far as like, I love her so much. I want her to go out and to have fun instead of being like, what are you doing going out? You know, I know she's having a good time, and we have like, and there's no distrust or like our bond is like so incredible that it's, like I said before, it's something I've never had before, and it offers absolutely zero room for insecurities.
Oh. All right, I want to get into wrestling history a little bit with you here, and then we're going to talk about stem cell stuff, because I think that's very important to talk to people about. Wrestling history, though, from a non-smark, right? They call the real smart wrestling people. I'm just a fan that watches every once in a while. I don't even watch WWE anymore. I actually now enjoy independent wrestling and the smaller promotions. But the WWE area, when you came into the WWE,
mm-hmm.
So I hadn't watched ECW. And so you come in there, and you were ECW to me. And I think to the fans that were like me, you were the whole fucking show in terms of what ECW was. And so you came in like a house of fire, and you were Mr. Monday Night and all that stuff. Do you feel like they misused you at the time, or didn't really take advantage of what they had in you?
Are we talking 2001 or 97?
Let's start with 97.
So in 97, I was completely set up by Paul Heyman, and as were all of us, and we didn't realize it, because obviously Paul was getting the exposure of having us on WWF with this invasion. And that's when I came on, and I wrestled Jeff Hardy when he was really young, and I wrestled Too Cold Scorpio. Paul told us that we're there for a limited time.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't true, but I didn't know. So he told us we're just there to get exposure for ECW. And so they had me going over some of their guys. And of course I was looking great, you know, cause no one had seen any of these moves.
Yeah.
After my first match in the dressing room, Owen Hart said, man, I like Rob being here. Watch one match. I got 5 new moves. Which, although it was a joke then, it was a joke then, but look at everybody now, you know.
Right.
Now they would have just,
planted a seed.
They wouldn't even told me. They would have just taken those 5 moves and as they did. But at the time, you know, I thought, here's what I'm here for, you know, to put ECW on the map, you know, give us a shot in the arm, some energy. And so when they wanted me to start doing things that were more WWE, I was completely confused. Like, hell no, why would I do that?
Yeah.
You know, it involved, you know, tagging with Jerry Lawler and gets the Headbangers. And I could see the storyline of me, you know, being buried by the WWE stories instead of the ECW one that I thought I was there for. And so in Detroit, I was wrestling Brian Armstrong, Jesse James, and they wanted him to go over. And, you know, I went to Paul for advice. Like, Paul, you know, you told me, because you've been telling me all along, you know, when things aren't going right, you just let me know and we're out of here. The first time he was like, they don't want us here. Watch your bags in the back. Everyone hates us being here. It really wasn't like that at all, but that's how Paul had us prepped.
Sure.
And so I said,
us
Paul.
Against them.
Yeah, totally. So I was like, hey, Paul, you know, they want me to put Brian over. You know, what would I do that? He goes, do you want to leave? I was like, well, if you say the word, if you want to leave, we'll go. I'm like, well, Paul, I'm asking you for advice here. You know what? And that's all he kept saying. You know, it's on you. Like I said, if you're not comfortable. And so that. So I said, well, fuck it. I guess let's go then. And so then we had to have a meeting with Vince. I never even talked to him before that.
Yeah.
I'd been there like 4 or 5 weeks and had never talked to him and had no idea what plans were. And at that meeting, that's when I found out. Vince was like, well, of course I plan on you staying here with WWF, or I wouldn't have put you on TV. And I was like, what? And I look over at Paul, and Paul's just looking the other way, talking to Bruce Pritchard, you know, twiddling his thumbs, like, you motherfucker. He knew that all along what the plan was. And he was like, he set us up to fuck ourselves out of a job, is what he did.
He screwed you. It's kind of what you're saying here. Which isn't the first wrestler that's told me a Paul Heyman screwed me story. It usually ends with not getting paid also.
I might not have wanted to go to WWE anyway, but just the fact that, you know, that I was misinformed and had a total different agenda than I thought I had. But so that was the first time. When I went back in 2001, I had a reputation for maybe being hard to get along with because of what happened in 97. So I had to meet with JR and had to talk to him. He had to approve of me and whatever. So then when I came in, yes, I was part of ECW, which I didn't even know until the first day I was there. I thought that I'd sold out. They were going to make me some weird character, you know, Robbie McDonald from, you know, the Hamburglar from McDonald's or some shit.
Right.
I don't know.
What was the worst one of all time? The Gobbler or something like that?
I thought, you know, there was nowhere else to work if I wanted to be a professional wrestler on TV in the United States. Everyone else was gone, bought out, closed. And I wanted that. I didn't want to keep wrestling in Japan. I wanted to make a career here. So I thought I sold out, and then Tommy Dreamer was there. Tommy, what are you doing? He threw me an ECW shirt. Like, yes, we're representing. Now, instead of burying my past, we're adding depth to it. So I was excited. I loved it.
That was cool.
As far as misusing me, I think they misused everybody. I think everybody probably at some time feels like they were misused. I felt like it so much that when I see footage from that, I'm like, dude, I beat The Rock? What? I beat Steve Austin? I don't remember that. You know, and I'm seeing all these matches, and it seems like, looking at it, like, well, no wonder the fans got behind me. Maybe they weren't holding me down quite as bad as I felt like they were at the time. Yeah. But it felt like I was, like, drowning in politics. JR and Paul each had one of my arms, and they were like playing Stretch Armstrong and tug of war with me, because who brought me in? Who brought me in? And it was like they get credit from above or something by who they represent. So all the agents, same thing. They represent different wrestlers. They all get together and try and push the wrestlers they're going to push, and why this guy should be in the main event tonight instead of this guy, and why we should put the belt on this. And it's all I hate the whole political game, and so that turned me off very much from it. And you know, I think that I also probably gave them some reasons to not feel super secure standing behind me all the way. Like, for instance, shortly after I got there, I was doing an angle with Stephanie McMahon. They wanted it to be like a love angle kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I had the most insecure wife ever, and so I wasn't willing to chance that.
Ah.
And so I told them, and then they were like, you know, they were like, oh, well, you know, as long as it's good that you told us, otherwise we wouldn't know. And then the next week they had it written again, and I thought they were just fucking with me. So I asked Brian, the office dude, I said, who do I got to slap to make this stop? You? He was like, no. I said, who wrote this? He said, Bruce. I said, where is he? And he goes, don't slap him. I said, if I find him, I'm going to smack him. And I was going to go up to Bruce and say, hey, pick a hand. Bam. I was pissed. Okay. And I thought they were fucking with me. And, you know, you go to prison, they say, like, you gotta stand up for yourself the first time someone tries to fuck with you, or they always fuck with you.
Pick that bully in the yard.
That's how I felt when I was there. So there was that.
Wait, you know, did you just break news here? Like, did they give the test the role that they had planned for you originally? Is that what happened?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know. It was Jericho was involved in it. And then they were saying, what if we do this? What if Stephanie has the hots for you and Jericho has the hots for Stephanie, and you don't really notice, because when Stephanie says, you know, that you're great, you just say, yeah, I am, and shrug and walk away. And I'm like, oh, I guess that would work. Yeah. You know, I don't really remember how clean that came out, but there was those things like that. And I smoked weed, you know, like blatantly, reeked like it every day, you know. And when you think about it, of course, this is 6-7 years later, but when they really... when they did put the straps on me, what did I do? I went and fucked up. So, you know, I got pulled over for speeding and had possession of marijuana. I had to drop both titles.
Oh, that's what I remember.
That's it was just me and Sabu. Everyone knew that we were together. We've always been together. Yeah. He's my brother. Yeah. He is the only guy in the whole business that that's that close to me. You know, I mean, we had our each other's backs in and out of the ring, like all over the world for 30 plus years now. Well, not 30 plus.
But isn't it funny though that what you got busted for is now legal today?
Yeah.
Not the driving while under the influence part, if there was, but
right.
And
it's not legal in all states.
It's legal now. We go. I got a text on my phone a second ago saying, "Click here to order weed online."
Yeah. Well, that's why I've been an advocate since like '98 or so when I first did the High Times magazine interview, because most people didn't know, and people they didn't know the truth, you know, because they fed us lies.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I can preach on this for a while if you want. In 1970, when Richard Nixon created the Controlled Substance Act, marijuana was temporarily put as a Schedule 1, which means the worst, right? Schedule 2 is where you find cocaine and meth, but
yeah.
Schedule 1, the worst.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it was supposed to be temporary by why this report, the Taft report, was supposed to come in and give the truth. And when he got the report, it said, hey, it's not that bad. You know, there's no proof that, of any of the bullshit that's out there. And he threw it away, and then he kept
sure,
it there.
Because the alcohol companies didn't want weed to be legal.
Yeah, so people used to say, do you think it'll ever be legal? I said, I know it will be. And so I spent, you know, a lot of time trying to tell everybody the truth about it, you know what I mean? And you're right, people say, like, why don't they just realize how much money is gonna be made when we tax it? No, just like you said, who's gonna make the money? Not the alcohol business, not tobacco, not fuel, not pharmaceuticals. They're not gonna make money off you. You know, not the cotton. Like, none of the businesses that marijuana competes with are gonna make money off of marijuana being taxed, and they're the reasons that it's illegal. People don't
really
campaign donations. They're the ones that make the rules. Yes.
Yeah.
The one percenters of the world. So, you know, forget about the government making money.
Yeah, that's Petrie in the background, just to remind you guys. He's a great little dog who, every time he doesn't get fed a chip, he growls at us. But no, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous that it's been illegal. And the problem here is that in your profession, you basically are slamming your head into the mat, into other people, into all kinds of things constantly. You're doing things the body is not meant to do. And this goes for football players too, and that means all
athletes.
And
yeah.
Here you have this amazing drug. Let's not even call it a drug. Let's call it a healing herb. And yet, for whatever reason, the government doesn't want to make it legal. And now that it's legal, they're still prohibiting it in many areas where people need it, like the athletes. And stuff.
But it's just about control, you know, absolutely about control and money. And so, you know, what they're doing at the same time that they're prohibiting it is they are gearing up and preparing for it becoming federally legal across the board.
Well, it's out of the bag now because you come back to the taxation.
Yeah.
I mean, every state now that's legalized it is discovering these wonderful revenues.
Yeah.
Now it's inevitable.
And so, but the government is buying up, you know, land and getting ready to make all the farms. So as soon as they say, okay, it's legal now, they're going to be the ones making money. Otherwise, they're going to hold out as long as they possibly can.
Yeah. Definitely.
Which, by the way, since you bring that up, something we didn't...
Yeah, that's what I want to get to is your CBD stuff.
Thank you, because we didn't know about this back in the day. We just thought, oh, pot makes you high, it's bad. That's what we were taught. It's a hallucinogen, like acid. That's what I was taught in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we know that while there's like somewhere around 100 different components of the plant, we're actually looking at some of the different ones now, the cannabinoids, and CBD is so popular right now, but it's going to be like even more popular next year, the year after. It's going to keep going up because people are accepting it. It's part of the plant that's medicinal but doesn't get you high. Now we know about that. We know about CBG, which also helps regenerate dead brain tissue. I'm actually taking that CBG, and it's like there's still so much more to learn about the plant, which eventually we will, but you know, yeah, just like the football players, wrestlers, we bang ourselves up. I've had over 500 concussions myself. I made a documentary on it called Headstrong that I don't necessarily want to plug because the middleman totally ripped me off, and they still have it up on the platforms making money off me. So I'm dealing with that right now. But
yeah.
but I'm very proud of the way it turned out. And it wasn't supposed to be about a concussion, but I showed up to film with a concussion. And then I thought, oh, it'll just go away. We'll go on with the plans. But the symptoms stayed. I've never had symptoms last from a concussion more than a day, except for this one on November 12, 2016. It gave me double vision, and the vision, even now, my vision's not the same as it was before that. Like, it changed. It changed the way my eyes work. But I went through vision therapy, had to get scanned, you know, and I got checked for CTE. I got lucky, no signs of CTE. However, I don't know for sure that won't come back someday. And so many of my friends have killed themselves, and the road to that seems to be, you know, concussions, depression, suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of my friends, and you're probably not surprised, I think this is out there known. There's been so many articles on how many wrestlers died young, you know, even just this year.
Yeah.
There's something on YouTube, and I can't remember how many. It was like in the 20s. Anyway, some of these people were
I was a fan of world-class championship wrestling with Devon Erics growing up. They're all gone except Kevin.
Yep.
Every single, it's not just the Von Erich brothers, it's pretty much everyone in that whole promotion.
Yeah, and NFL was talking about, they've been studying, thinking about having a CBD product, you know, to help their players. They were talking about making like a pregame pill, which sounds crazy, but anyway, I was just thinking, you know, all this stuff that I'm reading, why can't I gather all these ingredients together, go to some other scientists, some labs, some people that have experience? And so that's what I've done. And next week, actually, I will be, dropping, introducing, I guess.
Debuting, releasing your new product. This is wonderful.
Yes, RVD CBD. This is the first that I've plugged of it, and I say next week, not knowing when you're going to air this, but
this is going to air a week from today.
Okay,
so that's the 22nd.
That's my day.
That's the day. All right, so if you're listening to this podcast, where do we go? Because I'm first in line. Remember, I texted you like a month ago and said, when's this product going to be out?
Yes, you did.
Where do we go to get this?
So it's going to be premiering at the VapeCon, CBD OI, it's called, or something like that. It's a VapeCon that's here in Las Vegas, and at the same time, you know, I hope to have the website and everything synchronized so we can take orders.
Right.
You have
a booth at VapeCon?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to come by then.
We'll have some product, and we'll definitely have orderability. And I have my people that are working with me there. So, you know, it's a networking kind of thing. And I definitely want to grow ASAP. I've got other products in mind, but we're starting out with my money, so we're starting out small as opposed to, you know, boom, coming out with 15 different products. You know, I'm not starting out with CBD ball soap yet, you know.
Okay, good to know that you got that in the plans.
Yeah, but lots of things in the plans, and that's my passion is, you know, I don't want to kill myself and Katie and, you know, like a lot of my friends put themselves on a rope. I don't want to go out that way. And I also would like to be able to help my peers. So my stuff that I'm starting out with is super strength for guys like us. But then that's, you know, regular people should want to take, you know, what the pros are taking. Just like if you want to learn to swim and you can be trained by a Navy SEAL, then fucking A.
I want this, you know, I mean, everybody's got examples in their lives, but my stepfather is like 86 years old or something like that. He got on a CBD supplement in Texas where they sort of aren't allowed to sell it, but then they aren't prosecuting it, so I guess it's cool.
Yeah.
So he gets on this stuff, and my mom said, all of a sudden, he's over there building stuff again in the house.
That's awesome.
He's walking around. Now, all of a sudden, before he was just sitting in his chair all day, and now he's practically building a new house on top of the other house.
Isn't that crazy that they want to prohibit that?
It just boggles my mind that it's such a wonderful product that seems to have no side effects, and yet they don't want to prohibit it. You know, my dog was paralyzed for a few months earlier this year, and she was supposed to never walk again. Lately, I've been giving her CBD treats that I bought on Amazon, and she's like amazing now. She runs and plays.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's,
well, that's awesome.
It's got such an amazing effect. So I went in on this, and if you want to meet RVD here, get an autograph, and get to know his new product line, you're going to go to VapeCon on November 22nd in Las Vegas. We'll fill in the details on that later.
And so, and also by the 22nd, my website should be up, which is rvdcbd.com.
Oh, okay. rvdcbd.com. All right. Remember, we'll cover that again at the end.
Cool.
One last thing I want to ask you about. I think you did a evolutionary thing. You went down to South America and you got stem cell treatments. People are giving you shit about this, which just goes to show you that no matter what you do, somebody out there is going to take issue with it. But talk to us about how that worked out for you and how it could benefit other people.
Yeah, the issue that a lot of people have is based on ignorance and just lack of knowledge. And that's why there's so much pushback, you know, especially from religious groups. They think that the stem cells are taken from an aborted fetus or something like that. And they're so far off, you know.
Yeah.
You can look up videos on YouTube, but some of the videos on YouTube tell you that is how it is done, because I was looking it up.
Yeah.
You know, there's as much misinformation as there is, you know, truthful information. And maybe it was done that way at one time. I don't know. But when a woman goes through the in vitro fertilization, they take out so many stem cells, but then they only give her like three to find, you know, for it to work. And if it doesn't work, she tries it again, they'll take three more. But there's so many left over from that. And that's where stem cells come from. They come from, and they're taken from the umbilical cord. And anyway, a stem cell can become anything in the body. It can become a bone, hair, blood, anything. So they're finding miraculous results by targeting areas of the body that need stem cells and putting them there. There's a company called BioAccelerator, or BioAccel, maybe it's, I don't know if it's Accelerator or if that's the product, BioAccel. And anyway, they are in Medellin in Colombia, South America. And they have been getting a lot of the wrestlers to go down there with discounts offered. The doctors are donating their time. We get a 50% discount on on the materials, and that's in return for posting it on social media, getting the word out, because they really want to help a lot of people, and they want to get into our world and help the wrestling companies and MMA guys. And so I talked to Ryback, because he had just come back from there, and he...
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so talking to him made me really feel positive about doing it, because the great results he got. Kevin Nash got great results.
Yeah, Ryback's talking on Twitter about wrestling again, I think.
Yeah, that's how he said he thought he was done. And then after getting his shoulder processed, however you want to say, after getting the treatment on his shoulder, he said that he just felt great. And he said that he's done like 11 stem cell treatments in the States, and they weren't even comparable to this one down there.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So anyway, I went down there at the end of September, and, you know, I've been working with a lot of broken parts, you know. I just keep going. I'm like a Highlander, so I've been like...
Until they cut your head off, you're gonna wrestle. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Or at least I'll keep walking the earth, you know. And, but this gave me a chance to, you know, take care of some of that. And they called me, you know, out of the blue and asked if I'd be interested. And I don't remember actually even agreeing to do it, but I guess, you know, but the guy's a great, David Truitt is a great salesman, you know, and they answered all these questions and told me that I would be a candidate, even though I didn't think I would be, because I said, you know, like this wrist has a big gap in the bone where I never got a screw put in there, so there's no blood supply that travels across, and I have just dead bone that's rotting in my wrist since 1993. And I didn't think that would help that. And
yeah.
They said, yeah, no, we shoot it right in your wrist. And then, you know, my back is full of compressed discs, arthritis, and bone spurs. And they said, that's the number one best result we get from stem cells is the back. You know, so I went down there, and they gave me some, and I hurt my shoulders, I think, in the meantime, or maybe it was before, and I didn't get them checked out yet. Turns out that that they're both, I have two rotator cuffs that are torn, and I've been wrestling like this for like 4 months. It's been very, very painful.
You wrestled after you got back, right?
I wrestled.
You turned on Rhino after?
Yeah. And I don't know exactly when I tore my shoulders, but yeah, so I went down at the end of September. They gave me MRIs on both shoulders, both wrists, my back, my neck, everything, and ended up saying I needed the stem cells in both wrists, both shoulders, my neck and back, an intravenous one that they give you, and then also in your spinal fluid that goes up into your brain, and then Katie and Jennifer talked me into getting facial and hair rejuvenation. So I just had, I got so many. I said, just knock me out and do it all. But
your face looks good.
Oh, thank you.
Everybody wants to look like we're still in our early 40s or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's working for you.
I really don't do. Young. Thank you. I would say never, but Katie sometimes now, I guess, is a factor. But normally I don't do anything cosmetic. I'm just like, a man's man, you know, to an extent, to where like the nicest pants I have a drawstring in them, or, you know, like that's the normal me. Like I never had to learn how to dress sharp or how to drive the nicest car I'm a nonconformist, and I've never had to fit in order for me to be happy with myself.
Yeah, sure.
I say never, but I mean, you know, after fourth grade or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And I hated that as a kid. I hated that. You wearing Kmart shoes. And it's like, it's so stupid. But I see in the world now, a lot of people don't ever get away from that. They're still in that mentality.
It is,
and it just makes me realize how much different I am. If it wasn't for social media, I would have no idea how dumb so many of the fans are that think that way. That just, you know, they feed off negative energy, and the way that they think is like, it'd be so easy to tell this person, they'll ask me a question, and then when I answer it, then I'll say, well, how come you're bitching about that? And it's like, should I bother telling them I'm not? They asked me about it. No, it's not even worth, it dumbs me down when I converse with them. But anyway, I got 221 million stem cells put into my body.
Wow.
Yeah, it's now week 7. And just the other day, I did a few things to activate them that the guy that did it doesn't want me to talk about. But I was getting like not feeling any results, and some people feel it right away. Usually people feel something within the first few weeks. Like a week ago, I was still at zero, but you're supposed to get it at 3 months though. Like it says in the book, you'll feel the big changes at 3 months. And from three to 6 months is when they're really working the best. But, you know, most people feel something before, and I did not. The other day, after getting, I got a couple long days of therapy to activate the stem cells, and all of a sudden, there's a noticeable difference.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you really haven't wrestled with the results yet.
I came back.
I mean, I know you wrestled since then.
Oh, okay.
But you haven't wrestled feeling better yet. And maybe we're going to get to see a rejuvenated RBD.
I hope so.
Which is funny because the way they film Impact, you know, with the, they kind of pick a city and then they'll do like 4 shows in 4 days.
2 days.
And then four shows in 2 days.
Dude,
right?
That's my schedule. I work 2 days a month and back to back and do like a month's worth of TV. It's great.
A lot cooler than WWE.
Yeah. For the most part.
Constantly. Yeah. But the problem is like the stuff you're watching on TV can be from a month ago.
Right. Exactly. That's no way around that. You're right.
Yeah.
That's why some people think that they're going to have to change as they grow, you know, which, you know, maybe, but I'm sure budget-wise and, you know, and for their plans, it works out so far anyway.
They're excited. I have an entire Don Callis interview that I haven't put up yet because twice now since I filmed it, big changes have happened at Impact.
Yeah.
So Don's got to get back on the phone with me at least and redo now like the second half of the interview. But
people have been sleeping on Impact and just talking about AEW, you know, and NXT. And I mean, that's great, whatever. But we know that Impact's got some shit going on. And I've been there since April, and I've said since day one when people ask me, you know, I'm like, they obviously have something because they got me there.
Well, yeah.
And I mean that in the business sense, as in I'm doing it for the money. They're paying me, so obviously they're not as bad off as everybody thinks. And
now they have money. I think people realize that. You know, I can tell you I watch, I don't watch WWE, but I watch AEW and Impact are the two shows I watch. I think both of them are fantastic. I think Impact, from a pure entertainment standpoint, is the best show going right now.
Cool.
I'll say that with all sincerity. Because I like wrestling that's entertaining, where they pace it in a way that they keep you going for the whole show and that you don't kind of start checking your phone and tuning out as they're doing rest holds and all that kind of stuff. You know, like they have storylines. They want to have real villains. They're doing a good job of that on Impact. And then, you know, I'm excited to see what you and Katie are going to be doing. Is Katie going to be at ringside with you, or is she going to do it in her own character in the near future?
Probably all of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, she'll start out being there to give me moral support and lots of tongue during my matches.
But what about having her do, because I mentioned to her Missy Hyatt. You remember Missy Hyatt?
Sure.
Because I grew up watching World Class Championship Wrestling. Missy Hyatt was the ultimate valet, and she would have a purse full of foreign objects to use in the match. She would
right.
spray her perfume or whatever into the other wrestler's face, and then, like, any plans? I don't want to ruin future storylines here, but do you foresee her playing and taking an active role in helping you win matches, or just more support?
I do, and the thing is, we're really, hopefully we'll come across as different, mm-hmm. you know, because I've always been different, one of a kind. I don't think that's going to change, and the thing is, we're kind of being ourselves, you know what I mean? So it's not like we're acting, and so hopefully that will reflect our true selves in a way that'll stand out, you know, like I got, last year we were in the UK and I got into like this stupid little tussle, if you want to call it that, but I had to knock somebody on their ass in this bar, and the bartender comes up and he says, "You're cool, we saw the whole thing, man." I said, "Okay, that's cool, thanks." He left. I turned around and Katie was wailing on the girlfriend.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The bouncer came back up. "You can't be hitting people." I said, "I know, we're leaving." "Have a good night."
Wait, has this story been made public or no?
I don't know.
What happened here? It's like, what started the fight?
Oh, my God. I don't think it's interesting enough to tell. So okay. We went to the bar. We had been there the night before and sat at this table. So we went there the next night. All the wrestlers were there. The promotion was trying to get us out to promote. And I said, "Dude, this place is lame that they took us to. Let's go to the one me and Katie went to." And even though I said it's too lame to tell, I'm telling it. But anyway, basically these two people were at this table, didn't want us there. And they kept saying, "You can't be here, you can't be here." And people are kind of taking pictures. And the girl is like trying to block the camera and stuff. And I saw just like, hey, when security tells me to leave, I'll leave. Or when your friends show up. There's only two people in there, this whole section. And so they were mad. And so the dude got a little too close to me to mark his boundaries. And I ended up, you know, pushing him on a table, and fucking everything spilled all over him. I had to throw him down the stairs afterwards. And, no, honestly, like that happens more often lately than people used to ask me for stories like that. And I'd say, "Oh, it never happens." But honestly, just like in the last year, I can think of like four or five. But I'm not drinking right now because of the stem cells. I'm sure that's going to be a factor.
You're not even smoking. Last time I saw you,
Are
you smoking again now?
Well. I'm doing like a couple puffs here and there,
right.
And, you know, just off of doobie. Doobie lasts you a long time, and I'm trying, I'm trying to get no sugar. That's why I can't eat these cookies you got out front for me.
Let me just turn the tray.
No caffeine.
Okay,
and it's like
move my caffeine drink.
The cleaner my body is, the better chance the stem cells have of working.
Yeah.
But it does suck because I do like to drink and I do like to smoke. You know.
All right. I've taken up enough of your time today. Fantastic stuff here. I mean, I think it's
cool.
Just all riveting. Let's give you an opportunity to plug everything one more time here, because I know you sell your products on eBay, I think, or Amazon.
Yeah, I have an eBay guy. I don't even know. I have an eBay guy. I think it's the eBay /
RBD. Go to his Twitter and find
yeah.
his stuff here.
Yeah, I have a guy that posts. Like, if people can't tell that it's not me posting, then I just think that's on them. Because I'll talk like I talk.
Yeah.
And when he posts something, it'll be like, you know, have you found yourself losing energy during the day? You need something? And then people respond to it thinking it's me. And I figure, you know, maybe I should have him write something. But whatever. He's been doing it for a long time. Yeah. Plugging. Dude, on the 19th, which obviously before this comes out, a movie that I did a while ago comes out called Second Chance for Christmas. Because on the 19th and on the 26th, the movie that I told you I've been ripped off for, Headstrong, will be dropping on DVD.
Here, Petrie, take this. You're interrupting your dad's promo.
DVD on the 26th.
Right, so wait, the 19th, this is a mainstream movie that you did? It's, you played a role or a character? Or,
yeah, of course.
Who's the lead character or the lead actor?
It's, you know, it's like a Scrooge. It's basically like Scrooge, okay, modernized.
And this,
you know,
is
going to
be on, like, where'd they see it? On Netflix? Or,
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know how this stuff works anymore. I used to be on that side of the industry a long
probably
time.
One of the streaming platforms,
there
though.
If okay, not, so you guys find this movie. Netflix. What's it called again?
Second Chance for Christmas.
Second Chance for Christmas. Okay. Yeah. Then, so that's the 19th.
Yeah, the 22nd, I'll be at the VapeCon in Las Vegas.
Yep.
23rd, I got to wrestle in Puerto Rico. It's a 2-day con. I won't be there the second day.
Awesome.
And Katie, too, will be with me in Puerto Rico. Okay. And then on the 26th, Headstrong comes out on DVD. And I don't know where that's going to be either yet. I just know that it'll be released on the 26th.
And yeah, and Rob won't be getting a piece of it. So you guys, I don't know, maybe don't.
Yeah, no, the DVD I will.
Oh, you will? Okay.
Yes,
well, there you go.
The DVD's outside.
Get the DVD.
And,
just don't watch it streaming.
Yeah, and if you want to watch it streaming and you watch it on Fight TV, then I do get a small piece.
So
anyway, yeah, Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and Vudu, I had it on there since February, and so far I've made 0 cents off that because Distributor is going bankrupt, and they ripped off all the independent movie makers, so we're in the process of trying to move forward with that, but that's what the rest of my November. I've been so crazy busy lately, like since South Africa, came home for like 2 days, went to New Orleans, came home for like 1 day.
Did you wrestle in New Orleans or no?
No, I was just
wrestling.
Yeah, okay. And I was just booked there to sign autographs.
So you do actually still take independent dates here and there, obviously.
Once in a while, and it's always about whether somebody can afford my fee. I don't negotiate because there's a certain amount. And it's like, dude, I don't want to wrestle. I'd much rather stay home.
Yeah.
But for this amount, then it's worth it. You know, you try to, for less, no, it's not worth it. You know, get someone else. And yes, I know you can get three other someone else's for my price, but you called me, motherfucker.
But you will be wrestling in Vegas again, I think, in January, maybe.
I think it's February. It's February. Yeah, okay. And it's 3 days in a row that they're doing TV this time, so.
Awesome. So, yeah, you know what? I went to an event recently. It was an independent show. Not to name any names, but I was so amazed that all the characters on the undercard put on this incredible show, but then the main event was actually pretty disappointing in some ways.
Well, to that,
disappointing.
But to that, I gotta say, like, you never know how anybody's feeling. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's always been something I've tried to explain to people. Like, if you're, I may have 30 matches when I was in WWE. I may have 30 matches between now and next month. But you're buying your tickets for me to come to your town next month. You're expecting to see the Rob Van Dam that you're expecting to see, you know, even though I might have a sprained ankle and both knees hurt and maybe I'm sick, whatever, that's not for you, the fan, to worry about. That's for me, the professional, to deliver around that. But there's a lot of difficulty, or let me say it's challenging a lot of times, you know?
Yeah.
Like, could be tired, maybe I haven't slept in several days, whatever, but the fans will judge you because that's the only time they see. Just like if they meet you and you're a dick for your whole life, they're going to think you're a dick, you know? It's like, how many chances do you have to make an impression? But
all right, so wrapping things up again, go check out, I'm going to try to put this podcast up on the 21st so that all you guys can go remember to check it out on the 22nd. You do want to go meet RVD. This has been great. I thank you so much for coming on the show. You know, I said to Katie, I'm sad that you're not going to be in town because I would have wanted you to be there too. It would have been great to have both of you guys together. But now I realize that, no, I've had her story separately. I've had your story separately. The next time we can get everybody together, we'll get you guys in the same room playing off each other. So I think that'd be cool.
That's
so there you go, everybody.
Now you have a story of our interviews that you're building. It's going leading towards something. You're starting to get it.
There you go. To the RVD Katie Forbes documentary that we can put together, the podamentary that we'll put together. All right, if you're an RVD fan that's tuning in for the first time to the show because you want to check out RVD, we'd appreciate it if you would hit the subscribe
button. If you're not an RVD fan, what planet are you living on, right?
Yeah, do you really consider yourself a wrestling fan if you're not an RVD fan? Because what aspect of wrestling are you missing when you watch RVD? It's a whole fucking show.
Thanks, Glenn.
Sure. No, I mean that sincerely. For me, you always And again, this comes back to the beginning of my Jericho podcast where I talked about all things he brings to the table, but you're similar in that good promos, you do that. You do convincing moves. You do amazing moves. You can do anything you want to in the ring. You can carry a company. These are all the things that make you on the elite level of wrestling that limits, that's the top 1%, basically. So I'm glad to get to say that. I think we all who are fans owe you a thank you for all you've done over the years. So there you go.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, dude.
Thank you, Rob. What
thank you for being a friend.
Okay, so again, if you're one of the people that tune in and check out RVD, hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star review. We thank you very much for listening. This has been Mature Audiences Mayhem.